Yes.
So I think you touched on it just now that, you know, you got to practice your virtues. And but my question is kind of like rooted in some of my fears. Like I'm afraid that some of me still believes that even though I might be pro-life, that I understand that the next person may not believe that the body and soul mm-hmm. is the beginning of life, you know, at conception.
Right.
And I feel like I have to give them that right, or that
right.
you know, to choose, even though I know it's wrong.
Right.
And I've spoken to women who have felt hurt by it. But I wonder if understanding, or is there anything else that you could add to, because during your talk you talked about ideology, mm-hmm. and we kind of want to stay away from that. But I want to end up working at a pregnancy support group.
Right.
So I was wondering if there's anything you'd like to expand on.
Well, I'm going to talk more about that because now I'm going to move into the specifics of abortion and things like this and talk more about that. But I think what I'm trying to say is that, and it's sort of a, you know, politics are politics. And politics in this country are unstable. You know, I've always been interested in politics. It's been interesting being a priest. I've been a priest for almost 6 years now. Mm-hmm. And one of the things as a priest, you don't, you know, of course there are issues like abortion or marriage that you say, this is the church's teaching. Mm-hmm. But it's not my place as a priest to tell you whether or not you should vote Republican or Democrat. Mm-hmm. It's not my place to tell you whether or not you should be for or against high-speed rail, or whether or not we should have universal health care, or whether or not we should have a flat tax or a graduated income tax, or whether, you know, these things, or whether or not we should, you know, what should be, that's not my place. The issues that don't affect the salvation of, we have room for different opinions on things when it comes to politics, things like this. But I think this is, look, I've been paying attention to politics since I was in first grade. I remember when Mondale was running against Reagan. I was in first grade, and I just remember that as a kid. And, you know, if you look at American politics, there's a pattern. And again, from a linguistic point of view, you look for patterns and things. You know, we tend to elect one party. They get a sweep. They get the presidency. They get the Congress. They get everything. Like, oh, it's going to be, you know, it's going to be completely Republican now. It's going to be completely Democrat. And then after 2 years, Americans get a little antsy, and then the other party starts to take over the Congress. They start taking over the Senate, and then you have this kind of period where by the end you've got the president of one party and the Congress of the other, and they're kind of fighting it out for a while. And you think, okay, here we go. And then the next party sweeps in. And you think, oh, and so you know the you know, so if you're conservative liberal, you're happy about you're probably happy for about 2 years. But about 2 years, you know, if you like the Democrats, you'll have your president, you'll have your Democratic president, your Democratic Congress for 2 years, and then it'll start to shift. And you're like, ah. And if you're Republican, it's the same way. You're like, oh, well, it's wonderful now. And then the Democrats start taking your kind of answers. So you got about 2 years of where you're kind of happy with the way things are going at the end. There's going to be some real changes in what I want to see. Because people don't, I mean, you look at the studies with the current president. You know, a lot of the people who voted for Trump voted for Obama. You know, and so when it comes to like laws and things like this with abortion, you know, and I'll say this later on, you know, this year we might see, you know, we've seen changes in New York for the worse. But who knows, in a year from now, that could be undone. In Alabama, there's another thing going on, you know, they're really putting restrictions. Laws can change. I think we can't just put our faith in legislation and say, well, the law will get rid of that. The reality is for, I think you have to be realistic of where you're living. You're living in California. Now, I mean, we can hope for things, but I don't see abortion laws changing in California. I think the majority of the population. So regardless of how you feel about the legality of abortion, I think there's the reality that's here. I don't see it going. I'm not saying it's a good thing. I don't see California enacting stricter abortion laws that are going to restrict it. I just don't see that happening. I mean, we almost passed an ordinance where UC Berkeley was going to have on-campus abortion clinics. It got passed. It actually got passed, and the previous governor actually vetoed it. He says, well, you've got plenty of access in Berkeley elsewhere. You don't need this thing on campus. But that's where it's coming to, where college campuses want in their clinics abortions provided on campus. That's a horrible thing. So I think in a sense is that the reality is that, yes, legal abortion is here. It's here in California. I don't see it going anywhere. And so we have to say, okay, what do we do now? And I think the thing is that we have to buy our witness, you know, and buy our witness to the truth. You know, that doesn't mean we argue with people or make people or shame people. But I think we want to show we want to express people the sanctity of life and the value of the human person. And the first way we do this is the way we treat people. My patristics professor, who was a disciple of Elder Sophroni in England, and, you know, spent time in Greece. He was a Cypriot whose family immigrated to England. He grew up in England and lived in Greece and, you know, knew Elder Porphyros and Elder Paisios and all these people. You know, he always told us that, you know, the greatest sign of being a Christian is the way you treat other people. You know, this is a man who has a PhD from Oxford, who was in Thessalonica, knows, you know, all the greats of the 20th century, many of them. And that's what he said. It's not, you know, how can you defend Chalcedon? Do you know the Troparion for the four feasts of the Nativity? You know, it's how you treat other people. So I think first and foremost, the way you convey the sanctity of life is the way you treat other people. You know, there's no point in being pro-life if you're a jerk to everybody. Yes.
You mentioned earlier about like the post-traumatic stress, military. You know, mm-hmm. I was in the Army and I'm a veteran. I work with veterans, and I know that it not only happens to like the person who kills people or mm-hmm. who almost gets killed, but it's the fact that you see it,
yeah,
or that you consent to it, or that you're a yeah. part of it, or order it even. And I think it seemed like that would apply to this topic as well.
Of course.
Because, you know, we talk mostly about, you know, the woman and the choices that she makes, which is obviously the, you know, the center point of it on one hand, but then the man in specifically in that relationship who, you know, oftentimes encourages it.
Right.
Or even just, if he doesn't, he just consents to it, or in some cases doesn't have a choice. Mm-hmm. They don't have the choice as much. Mm-hmm. And I would say that it seems, I don't know if this is part of the topic here, but that in going further out, kind of like what you were saying about things, it's just like when you're sort of like silently consenting or encouraging it,
right.
It seems like there could be as much damage, maybe not as much, but a similar effect on yeah. your soul by just being a part of it from the outside.
Well, that's what we say. When we look at like church documents, especially modern church voices on abortion, it's very clear that, you know, the blame for the abortion does not just lie on the mother. It's the doctor who's carrying it out. It's the people who pushed her into that situation to do that. It's the father of the child who yeah. says, it's not mine, or I'm not responsible, or, you know, who either through his neglect of her or through whatever, through his behavior, has influenced her to go, even if it's just like, okay, I'm skipping town. You know, he is just as much to blame for the murder of that child as the mother who got pregnant. That's very clear. That's very clear. We will be looking at that in part two. Any other questions? Okay. Well, it's 10:17. Veronica, should I continue now, or are you going to give your part, or what is next? I don't have the schedule in front of me.
I have a lot of material, and I was expecting to go ahead and go after you. Do you want to go ahead and finish up?
I can finish up, and then it can be all your stuff afterwards. Yeah.
Maybe it'd be great if I could start at 10:45 or 11. But I think your part is the most important, so I don't want
okay.
to do that. If you need to finish at, you know, 11.
Okay, I think we can be. And then if we have more questions, we can just discuss more things after lunch. Maybe that's the best way to do it.
Yeah. So please don't abbreviate.
All right.
But
or speak faster. You know. All right. I will stay out of the chipmunk mode. You know. Anyway, so I will continue now. So the next part is called Abortion: The Unholy Tradition. Two major misconceptions about abortion are that it itself and the church's condemnation are modern phenomena. This is a new thing. The earliest Christian document after the New Testament, we call it the Didache, the teaching, states, you shall not murder, you shall not abort a child or commit infanticide. It's interesting that the Greek word for abortion literally means you shall not murder a child by destruction. That's the Didache, and they're using Kine Greek, so I don't know modern Greek. But that's the understanding of the word is murder by destruction, by destroying the fetus. That's the concept of abortion in the Kine Greek. Another document and one of the first apologetic writings of the second century, called the Epistle to Diognetus, distinguishes Christian behavior from pagan, among which is they, or the Christians, marry like everyone else and have children, but they do not expose their offspring. And all condemnations, both in the Holy Scriptures and any Christian document holding dogmatic or canonical weight, are never hypothetical, but address the falsehoods and works of evil of a time and a place. So the church never just says, well, we've got nothing better to do, let's invent a dogma, or let's imagine a sinful situation and condemn it. It always is dealing with what is actually happening. And thus, from the very beginning, the church has always combated the sin of abortion. Notice that in the Didache, abortion and infanticide are inextricably linked. Many pre-Christian pagan cultures practiced infanticide, either as a sacrificial offering in certain cultures, or as a means of eliminating those infants who appeared physically inferior. You know, that was the case in Sparta. They would make sure everything was okay, and if you weren't good, they'd kind of cast you aside. Unfortunately, infanticide continues to this very day, most notably in China and in India. Where it's a big problem in China, where you know, a lot of girls, infant girls, suffer the infanticide at a much higher rate than boys. Because for a long time, China's had this one-child policy, and it seems like everyone wants to have a boy. So if you have a child, you just toss it away. So infanticide, and you see in the early church, they always connect abortion with infanticide. So anyone who says, well, if you're pro-life, you don't care about children after they're born. You're only interested in the sanctity of life up until birth. Once they're born, you don't care about them. Well, that's not what the Didache, that's not what the Epistle of Diognetus says. Abortion is not a new thing. Our attitudes toward it maybe are new, but it is not a new phenomenon. The most ancient record of abortion comes from a papyrus fragment in Egypt dated 1550 BC. Ancient records of abortion, either as laws regarding abortion or medical texts, can be found also in India, Japan, China, Assyria, Greece, and Rome. They range from recommended physical activities that could result in miscarriage to recipes for potions and even surgical procedures. As can be imagined, these methods of abortion also pose great risks for the mother, as any surgical procedure would prior to modern medicine. Even in the 19th century, the mortality rate for women in the city of New York undergoing surgical abortion was 30%. So, you know, you think New York in the 19th century, probably in the 19th century world, that was a great place for medicine with all the universities and clinics and hospitals. But it was, you know, in the 19th century, 30% of women who had a surgical abortion in New York died.